Spend your afternoon with Azania Mosaka on 702.
Let's walk the talk.
It's 10 minutes past 2. I've got to tell you, I was first introduced to the music of our guest, Joanna Matrading, when I was in my teens, and I had this cool older cousin, Osma Jai. And she really broke convention with what we thought of women at the time, how women lived their lives. She lived in her own house. She drove a Golf, you know, a GTI. She had her own liquor in the house. And we'd sometimes go there to spend the holidays with her. And Joan Armatrading was one of her favorite artists. So I always think of Joan Armatrading with great affection because she reminds me of this very bold woman in our family. In my books, she was very bold. We looked at her and looked up to her in awe because she just broke all of these conventions for that time. And I always associate the sound of this great artist with my cousin. And ever since then, of course, I've also grown to love her music in my own right. And many people have, lots of you have your own memories of when you saw her performing. One of our listeners tells us about a performance that he caught at Monte Cassino a few years ago. Julie, for instance, says her music was iconic in the late 70s. I can't wait to hear from her. The coolest musician ever. And she's been recognized with a number of accolades over the years, made CBE from MBE, like, you know, the national orders for the UK. We have our own national orders here in South Africa. She's a trustee of the Prince's Trust. She's been awarded an Ivo Novello Fellowship, and she received an American Lifetime Achievement Award plus a Lifetime Achievement Award for Women of the Year. She is the first British female singer-songwriter to achieve international success, and she remains a global inspiration, and she joins us now. Good afternoon, Joan. Lovely to chat to you. Welcome to 702.
Good afternoon. What a build-up. Who is that?
Of course it's you. Do you sometimes stand on the sidelines and listen to what's read about you and kind of feel a little bit, you know, disassociated from it?
I do. I sometimes think, as I just said, who is that? What is all that about? I mean, you can't really afford to take much notice of all the things that's said, because you don't want to get a big head, you know. My head is big enough about the music that I write, so I don't add anything else.
Where does that come from, though? Where does that come from, thinking that I shouldn't get a big head? Were you told, maybe, did you hear it from your parents, or just learned not to show off in life?
No, I think it's good to have confidence. You know, sometimes people look at confidence and they say it's an arrogance, and of course it is, but I think in certain things, it's a very healthy thing to have arrogance and confidence. And I'm incredibly confident about the songs that I write. I've always have been. And that's why I say I'm big-headed about that side of me.
Yes.
But the other parts, I kind of like to stay in the background. And, you know, when I started my career, it wasn't to do with being a pop star and being famous and everybody knowing me. I wasn't really interested in that at all. Still not really. Mm. But what I was interested in was everybody knowing the songs. And, you know, if I would walk down the street and somebody be whistling Drop the Pilot or whatever other my songs, how cool is that? But I would be walking past them. They wouldn't know. They wouldn't know it was me, but they'd know that song. Love that. Absolutely love that.
Yes. I mean, one of the things that's often said about you is the level of privacy that you've maintained over the years about your life. I mean, you've accomplished a hell of a lot. I listed some of the accolades you've received over the years. But you do other things. You know, you achieved a university degree. You ran the New York Marathon. And a whole host of things apart from the things that we associate with your music, but they also other personal achievements. But in a world that is obsessed with showing off and telling all, you have maintained the separation, and it sounds like it was by design.
Absolutely. I think it's very important. I've always been, this is the only Joan I know, and this is the Joan that I've always known. So I don't think from, you know, being born to this age of 70, that I need to change myself and suddenly be this revealing person. Mm-hmm. It's not a natural place for me to be. It's not a place I want to be. So I don't think I need to be. it's everybody else, if you're happy to tell. The way I put it is, if you've got 10 friends, right, do you tell each of those friends exactly the same bit of information? Do you tell your best friend a certain amount and the 10th one, who is not your best friend, a whole different... That's how life works in the real world. So why should I suddenly be telling millions of people everything, every single aspect of me, when I wouldn't even tell 10 friends the same bit of information? It makes no sense. So I think I just need to live my life in the real world. This is how the real world is. And you have to also remember that sometimes telling everything is a security risk.
Yes, it is.
Security risk. Mm-hmm. I did an interview with somebody, a very well-known person in the UK, who did an interview. They put themselves in the paper, they showed all their house, they did the thing. Next thing, they had a stalker, and next thing, they had to move. Yeah. This is the true story.
Yeah,
you need to be careful what you're doing.
No, you know? Absolutely. There's a lot that this generation can learn from you. Earlier, you talked about wanting to be known for your music. And I must say, you are one of my favorite kind of artists. You're a songwriter. I have great admiration for songwriters, because I think it's a really particular kind of talent, you know, a lot like poetry, very particular, almost a higher form of writing to a degree. But not only are your lyrics great, the words that you choose can be so unexpected, and you're able to convey emotions in a way that is not cliched, in a way that tells a lot, and you say in such a succinct way. You tell us a lot of about the emotion, but in a very succinct way. It's a very unique talent you have.
Thank you very much for that. I think you're right in terms of songwriters being people who have a particular talent. What you're trying to do is say in 3 minutes, 3-4 minutes, you're trying to be very articulate, very precise, convey every aspect of that subject in this really short space of time. And it is a trick, it's a talent. When I write, I try and have the words so that if you weren't listening to the music, you could look at the words and think, okay, I completely understand what that's about.
Yeah.
And I'm not interested in rhyming. I'm not interested in thinking in a poetic way, although people say when they read the lyrics, sometimes it's poetic. I'm not interested in a poetic way, but I'm definitely interested in trying to get the emotion of what I'm saying across. And when I did the last album, which was called Not Too Far Away, and I played that to a small group of people, they all cried. And I was so happy. You couldn't get a happier person, because they'd completely got what it was a bunch of songs, but they'd completely got what it was about. And the emotion of it overtook them, and they all cried. How happy was I?
That sort of reaction.
It was just fantastic. this album now lifts you up. This album is, this should give you lots of joy.
Yes, we're talking about Consequences, your latest album, which features your latest single, Already There. And it's beautiful. I mean, we were just talking about your songwriting, but I went and took some of the lyrics, because, singing along, and I thought, let me look at them as well in just without the music. And you say, you just told me you loved me for the very first time, and it feels like I'm flying and the sky is all mine. I'm floating on air. Let me tell you my secret. I've never said it before. While you were falling in love, I was already there. Oh, gosh. That's heavenly. Just so, just masterful. Absolutely beautiful. But you started,
That's a story of two people falling in love. And I think when people fall in love, two people, it's not a simultaneous thing. There's always one person who's just a bit ahead, and they're waiting for the other person to catch up. And beauty of this song is the person has caught up. That's why they say, you just told me you love me for the very first time. And now you've got a really happy ending. Love stories. It's nice.
yes. But you started writing at a very young age. What do you think, over the years, when you've looked back at what you were writing at like 14, what do you think of what you were writing then?
Before I started writing lyrics, I used to write limericks, and which is, you know, funny little limericks. So I used to write that. I used to write little funny little stories, and I used to write jokes. And then when my mom bought the piano, as soon as she put it in the front room, then I just started writing songs with lyrics, and I think I was born to do this. This is, you know, nobody said, Joan, this is how you write a song. This is how you put the arrangements together. This is how you play. Nobody told me any of that. So it's a God-given talent that I just, it's my job to use to the best of my ability. And that's what I try and do. But I would imagine when I was younger, the songs might not have been necessarily the best songs. I do remember writing a song called When I Was Young, which to me is weird because I'm this young person. I know that when I was younger, I used to go to the library a lot, and I would read all the classic books from Mark Twain to Dickens to Shakespeare to, you know, whatever was the classic stuff, I would just be reading it. And I loved the way the words went. I loved how, you know, it just took you off into this imaginary world, and the phrasing of everything was just so beautiful. And I'm pretty sure that's what got me into writing in the way that I write. I just love the words.
Wow. One of our listeners, Robert, says, I'm so excited for this interview. I didn't know that she plays all of her own instruments. Well, if you haven't heard Already There, it is such an amazing song. So moving. This one, it comes from Robert in Houghton. We did play your song a little bit earlier on, but you play the guitar, 6-string and 12-string guitar. Tell us the story of your very first guitar.
Yeah, my dad used to play the guitar, and he used to play it. If you think of when you were at school and you know, you go like that to hide your work, that's kind of how he played the guitar. he definitely didn't want me to have anything to do with that guitar. So he, not only did he kind of always play it where I wasn't around, but he would hide it.
Yeah.
So because of that, it really made me want to play. And then I saw a guitar in a pawn shop, and I said to my mom, can I have that? And it costs £3. She said, well, we don't have £3, but I've got two old prams. If they'll swap the two prams, you can have the guitar. And that's how I got my first guitar. So my mom actually is very instrumental in what I'm doing. She got the piano. She got the guitar. So, you know, thanks, Mom.
Yeah. And now, you know, I can't remember which music video it is, but there's a music video where you play a 12-string guitar. Between the 6 and the 12, what do you prefer? And of course, electric, acoustic, or is it about phases over time?
It's about songs, because some songs will need an acoustic 6-string, some will need a 12-string, some will need an electric guitar. So whatever the song needs, that's what I'm going to play. And you know, on the record, and this record and many, many other records, I'm playing everything that you hear. The drums I program, but everything else I play. And I love playing the electric guitar, I really do. I love playing the guitar in general because I find it a very challenging instrument to play. It's not easy to just look down and know, okay, that's what you do. Whereas the piano is quite easy to just pick out a tune just with one finger.
Yeah.
You know, that's the beauty of the piano. You can literally play with just one finger. But I love playing. Oh, it's so hot here. I'm sweating, and the thing is going in my eyes.
Oh, sorry. We're sitting in the middle of winter, and I know, you know, the UK is having its summer now.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Right, and it's really hot. Mm-hmm. So I love playing the electric guitar, and very often people will hear the albums. They'll hear certain guitar things, and they won't think it's me. They'll think it's whoever else. I remember the record company did a focus group once. There's a song of mine called Lost the Love.
Yes.
It's got a great guitar solo in it, though I saved myself. And they asked everybody who was playing that. And they mentioned just about every guitarist, from Clapton to Mark Knopfler to Jimmy Page. They mentioned everybody. Not one person said Joan.
Oh.
It was Joan, though.
It was, yeah. So there's a lot, I guess, that still needs to be communicated, you know. And now I'm quite curious, because you turned 70 in December.
Yes.
What have you given yourself permission around and for with this particular milestone? Because you speak with such confidence. There's no, and it's not boasting, because it's fact, right? It's not a brag, because it is fact, right? And there's truth to what you're saying. Have you always been that assertive, that confident, and that sure about your gifts and your achievements? Or is it something that you've now given yourself permission to own?
No, I've always been like this. This is what I said. This is the only Joan I've ever known. You know? I've been like this since I was a little person, growing up, teenager, in my 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s. This is all I've known. And to me, that's the beauty of it, because I don't have to change. You know, I just be me.
That's beautiful. I realize that you're originally from St. Kitts in the Caribbean. And for some of us, it's a little known West Indian island. I had to literally go and look it up, because I thought, St. Christopher, where is that? What's the history of St. Christopher? A population of 40,000 people is what the latest is. I mean, avid cricket lovers may know, you know, a little bit about St. Christopher, because it hosted the Cricket World Cup a few years ago, so known as St. Kitts. But do you still go back there? And what led to your family leaving?
I haven't been back to St. Kitts in a few years now, the last time I went back, it was gorgeous. But the first time I went back, I can't remember how old I was, but I was with an album, and it was so funny, because I got off the plane, and I saw like a whole group of people waiting at the end of the runway, with steel bands and kind of dignitary type people and all this. And I tried to get out of the way, because I was thinking, I wonder what's happening. And I tried to make sure I wasn't in the way with all this stuff. And it was actually, for me, it was so cool. But, you know, it was kind of a surprise to me that would happen. But, yeah, I mean, I my father was from St. Kitts, my mother is from Antigua, left St. Kitts when I was 3 to go to Antigua, left Antigua when I was 7 to come to Britain. And I'm very proud of being born in this little place, but I'm also very proud of being a very kind of British person, so I've got these two really cool things to be associated with.
Yes. Like I said, you know, we think of, because you shaped British sound. You're one of the artists that has shaped what we think of what British sound is. You know, when I think of that era, some of the other acts that came out, especially in the 80s, the 90s, I'll speak for, you know, my age particularly. That's where it was most pronounced for me, or when I started kind of having an ear for what British sound was. And you're certainly one of the people that has carved out a sense of what is a British sound.
Yeah, I feel very lucky that I'm able to do what I do. And, you know, my first album was 1972, so next year will be literally 50 years. How lucky am I to have had such a sustained career? Obviously, I didn't do it on my own. All the people who like my music, that's what's allowed me to have this career, so I never forget that. But I'm really happy that to be able to do this thing that I absolutely love, as a job. It's not a job, I don't know what you call it, but this, you know, it's the way I make my living. But it's just such a pleasure. I'm at my happiest when I'm writing. sometimes if you saw me when I was writing, you'd think I'm a bit mad.
Yeah. I hear you move around a lot when you're writing. What's the importance of movement?
Well, not only do I physically move around like this, but I literally move around the room.
Yeah.
So because, you know, you can write a song in like the left-hand corner, and it's a different song to the song you'd write in the right-hand corner.
Oh.
And you can write a song with one guitar that would be a different song if you write it with a different guitar. It's incredible when you just do that change, that the change happens.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the things I always think about is this chap, he was a DJ, and he said to me once, he didn't know why he had a producer. He said, you know, I do everything. I do the playlist. I look all the songs. I present the program. He said, I literally do everything. I operate the desk. He said, I'm thinking, why do I have a producer? And he said, at the moment he was thinking that, the producer walked in and said, do you want a cup of tea? And he said, he realized that you need sometimes those interruptive things. You need that change. You need something that kind of veers you off into a different direction. Mm-hmm. And the thing that you think isn't so important is actually a quite a vital part to what you're doing.
Yes.
So that's why I move around a lot.
I want to quickly talk about your voice before we conclude, because listening to this album, to Consequences, which is your latest release, it is still so strong. Still so strong. Has it always been that way, or were there times in the nearly 50 years where it was in a different kind of season?
No, it's always been like this. I don't do anything for it, I just have it. It's just mine.
Joan magic, there we go again. But at the same time, it's able to sing with so much integrity, there's warmth and there's humanity in the voice, and yet at the same time, there's the strength. Where does that come from? Have you thought about that?
No, not really. Only because, as I say, this is all I know.
Mm.
So,
born to do it.
I absolutely. I have to do it. It's. I think if I can't do it, I'm going to die. It's. I've got to do it.
Yeah. Have you thought about till when?
Oh yeah, till I die.
No retiring. No retirement for you.
Not from writing. There's no need for me to retire from writing. As long as the brain is there and I can come up with the you know, I can still observe people and I can still come up with the ideas of the songs and the melodies, then yeah, there's absolutely no reason for me to retire.
Yes. Listen, we're out of time. And I know that lots of people are going to say, I should have been calling you Mama Joan, because in our culture, that has to be there. That has to be there. But thank you so much for adding sunshine into our day, from when we played your music to even speaking to you now. It's just uplifted. Everything is uplifted. The mood has shifted. The energy's moved.
That's really nice. And you know, I love South Africa. I absolutely love South Africa. I've been there a few times now, and it's always a joy. It's always a pleasure.
Yes.
Love the people, love the countryside, but just love it. So thank you.
And we're hoping to see you soon. Consequences needs a little bit of a performance and a tour down south.
Yeah, I'll promise that. We all know where we are with this.
Yes, of course. Thank you so much for your time today.
My pleasure. My pleasure.
Oh,
enjoy your day, everybody.
Wonderful. And that was Joan Armatrading. Oh, just love has deepened even more.